Hello, 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 and welcome to the My Empty Hands podcast, a martial arts podcast with a focus on Kenpo. I am Reggie Darden, and I am very excited that I have Sean Kelly on with me today to just kind of give a little peek behind the curtain, so to speak. So Mr. Kelly actually is my first repeat guest. We had a little technical difficulties with our previous recording, and so we're going to do it again. I haven't completely decided on if I'm just going to post just this episode or if I'll get some editing from our other sessions. So Still figuring out what I want to do there. So we may cover some things from our other post or other recording. That's fine to hear the stories multiple times. I'm fine with that. So hope everybody else is too. But we're just gonna get into whatever we get into. Let's just start with how did Kenpo find you, and just get into your journey there.
Well, thank you for giving me this opportunity to share a little piece of my journey, which it's still going on, still growing, still learning, still networking, which is something I always have a pleasure in doing, meeting people like yourself who archive some of the older people that have been around for a little while. Then to me, it's all about really technically you guys, the generation after us. So I appreciate the opportunity. And my journey with Kenpo actually, quite honestly, is through the channels of my first instructor. For those who've gotten Ed Parker's book, the Kanchaka, in the book, he talks about one of his seventh degree black belts who created a nunchuck called the Kanchaka. And his name was Francisco Conde, which would, I guess, put me into being the link. I was a student of Mr. Conde's, and that was the channel on how I met Mr. Parker, was through Master Conde. And ironically enough, Mr. Conde and Mr. Parker go back since, oh my God, the 50s. I guess they met originally in Hawaii when Mr. Conde, at that time, when he was in the military, he was stationed in Hawaii at the time doing his tour. And being Filipino, he connected with the Umbarados, who are well known for the Kojin Kenpo system. So it was during that time and stay, training and being with the Umbarados, he met Ed Parker and another gentleman by the name James K. Roberts. But it was at that point that they not only became friends, but he always considered Mr. Parker his senior, and they kept their relationship since that time forward. And again, I was just a young kid who happened to be at the right place at the right time, starting to learn, some of those principles that he extracted during his time with the Kojin Kenpo system, even though he had black belts and other styles, but he had great influence, especially with the hand striking and the fast, barrage of movement, which what we're known for. He brought that into his own organization, which allowed me to learn at least a piece of the what I call the dynamics of Ed Parker's system. So that was my first experience. I guess the physical part was I actually met him in 1978, around that time and era. I talked to him a few times because I was working with Mr. Conde at the time. We had three businesses. We had a karate school. This is all Lancaster, PA. We had the karate school. We had a trophy business because he was well known since the 60s all throughout the East Coast doing tournaments. He was a promoter. And then we had a trophy business. And needless to say, Mr. Parker would call often and always just a joyful of a personality. And he would call and say, "Oh, is this the Irish boy?" And I'm like, "Yes, sir." He goes, "Oh, this is Ed Parker. Is Francis there?" He called him Francis. And I said, "Yes, sir, he is." And he would talk to him. But being in his company was an experience, and you just knew he was in the room. He had such an aura of energy and just presence. And it was in Baltimore at the Patapsco High School during one of the tournaments that Mr. Conde held that Ed Parker came as the special guest. And it was like Elvis came into the building. He was just got out of the chair and he says, "Oh, so you're the Irish boy that I've been talking to." And he gave me this big, huge hug, embraced me. And it just every time I saw him, I mean, he was always kind and happy and told jokes. And of course, besides that, when he was at his best, you know, demonstrating. And one of the things about Ed Parker was he was one of the first people I ever saw teach at any function, at any event, not just a Kempo gathering, but any martial arts style and system in age. He was such a genius at communicating that there was no way you weren't going to learn or go away with something to add to your toolbox. So that was my first encounter with Ed Parker, was in that time and era.
Very nice, very nice. So kind of deviate a little bit from the Kempo here. So in our previous chat, you mentioned that you had trained some time under George Delmont.
I did, yeah.
So I'm going to try and steer away from any kind of controversy or anything for those that are maybe not so familiar. George Delmont is, you know, he's been around for a long time, and he's got kind of some, I don't know, controversial.
Yeah, the George Delmont I met was only teaching at that time Okinawan Kempo. Mm-hmm. And so he was also a well-known promoter in his own right. He was based out of Reading, Pennsylvania. And I remember one of the, actually, I don't want to say scary, but just startled me. Across the street from the school is where we parked. And as I was crossing the street with one of my best friends, Louis Grimaldi, Dillman owned a cougar. So Louis said,
an actual cougar?
An actual cougar. It was called Googer. Googer the Cougar. Duger the Cougar. That's what it was, Duger. So I remember we were going up the flight of stairs, and before, because Louis went ahead of me, he goes, oh, look, he's got a little kitty cat in the back of his vehicle. I'm like, kitty cat, who cares? He goes, oh, no, you got to look. I looked, and man, this thing just, oh, my gosh. It was scared the crap out of me, because I'm like, who owns a cougar? I mean, this guy, it was his own pet. But he did. He was known to have a cougar, and for sure, I saw it.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, the first time I met George Delmont, you know, I was such a Bruce Lee nut that I didn't believe half the stuff he told me. But, you know, when you walk up the flight of stairs, there was these live size, probably about a good 20-foot poster with him and Muhammad Ali, and, of course, with Bruce Lee. And the truth of the matter is, because he was an Okinawan stylist, Bruce Lee was the kind of guy well-known to come to the East Coast often. And Bruce Lee, George Dillman, Danny Pai, Henry, was very common that they would all get together at different tournaments and be there with each other. And the truth of the matter is, you know, we have to understand, you know, Bruce Lee had instructors too. And he, like many back in the day, they would exchange ideas, no matter what their style or system was. And so with Dillman kind of showed him a few things with the nunchuck. So that was the relationship they met, and obviously coming to some of the East Coast events with Dillman and also Junri and some of the other people. That's all they all back in the 60s. That was very common that they would all get together, as well as going to the internationals at, you know, Ed Parker's IKCs. But that was the Dillman. I was only there for about a year. It just wasn't my thing. I wasn't a traditionalist hard style type personality. I was, you know, young, and I wanted a little more dynamite, move around, get me busy. You know, I wasn't in the patience of just doing kata, if you will, especially with, you know, no explanation of the why, what are you doing it for, versus people's interpretations. And so it was about a year later, met Master Condi in Lancaster, and that was my home. And it was a tough school. I mean, you're inner city, you know, pretty much a predominant black community with Latin American people. I was like one of only three white guys that went to the school. And to me, they were my big brothers. And to this day, many of them I still stay in touch with.
Excellent. Excellent. So, yeah, at the time with Mr. Delmont there, it wasn't any of the,
he wasn't
the controversial training.
Yeah, today he does what's called, or today, like you said, the controversy. But he was doing this pressure point stuff he called tuate. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in Kempo, we call it delayed sword.
Gotcha.
Yeah. But, you know, nothing for nothing. I mean, the guy's he's a heavy set guy. So if you volunteer sticking your arm out, I don't care who you are, you'll get japped in the side of the neck. It'll hurt anybody.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so going back, as I've been, you know, hearing stories and whatnot about Ed Parker, I'm curious, as you know, after you met him and just and you know interacted with him, trained with him, and whatnot, are there things that that surprised you about him that you know maybe we're not really aware of, or maybe that's not talked about much?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's things I know that isn't for public to need to know, because that's mm-hmm. just the other side, that Ed Parker had a image in public, you know, in the persona of the world of martial arts, and then he had who he really was in regards to what he was known for. You got to understand, Ed Parker was a personality that took care of business, hence why Elvis hired him, you know, to be a bodyguard, and mm-hmm. so it, were most of the bodyguards, black belts, if you will. But what I'm getting at is, you know, it was very common knowledge that going to Chinatown back in the day and him having relationships with some of the Chinese syndicate people were known, like La Boon and a few other people. The point of the matter is, the Ed Parker I know and would share is, not only did he carry himself well, he was very confident in his ability, but more importantly, he's part of the most educated communicator I've ever met in regards to being a professional facilitator that I was impressed by. And not too many people have I met, and they're good at their particular skills, maybe their background in fighting or doing things, but when it comes to captivating an audience, either a Kempo audience or even a non-Kempo audience, Ed Parker is probably one of the best I've ever seen, hence why I sought out more and more to become a professional coach, because it was also lacking. And, you know, having a school and keeping student retention, you know, it's not back in the day where if you had a question, you know, you were allowed to ask that question. And if you, how dare you ask one, and, you know, we'll get up here and I'll show you. And then they beat you up and they thought that was kind of cool. No, that's called bullying. It's not a good communicator. Whereas Ed Parker was controlling his situation. When he taught something, let it be on the physical side or the communication side, he put both of them together and you fully understood, because it was a science. And he created a system, because Ed Parker, he was adamant. He really wanted our art to be in the school system. In other words, like learning a language. That's why the manuals were developed the way they were developed. And he was able to pull that off and expand, you know, all over the world. Hence why probably now more than ever, people are still learning pieces and bits of the Kempo system, or even maybe converting over after whatever they learn from the system that they obtain their black belts. That's one thing that I can say is there's a definite blueprint of what we do, and there's the how and there's the why. How you put it together in your journey, let it be for life or death, or maybe in your career. Maybe you're in law enforcement or security or a correctional officer, or just doing it for just socializing. To me, it became my way of life too. And it never divorced me. It's always been a place I can call my safe place. And I've made lots of friends, I mean, globally, from a hobby as a young boy to a career as I got older. So all I have to say is Ed Parker made it quite unique for many of us to enjoy the passion of teaching and sharing the martial arts.
Excellent. So I've been kind of getting a sense and on kind of other shows and interviews with different people. I kind of get the sense that Ed Parker kind of gave a little to, you know, didn't necessarily teach everyone the same. And I'm curious in your experience and connecting
He did that purposely. Every decade, Ed Parker taught something different. So what he taught in the 50s wasn't the same in the 60s. That's why when we had our organization, the CKF, so we have myself, Reiner Schulte, and people like Mike Pick, who come from three different eras of Ed Parker's system. And we're able to share those different time and eras to the new students. That's the part that it's a journey for sure, and you'll never come to the end of the road there because there was so much to learn and so many people. You know, what he taught Frank Trout is the same thing he worked with Larry on, mm-hmm. you know, or Speakman for the year that, or whatever it was that he worked with him, which was mostly during that time of the movie, The Perfect Weapon. Mm-hmm. You know, but if you look at most of the people that are considered first through fourth generation of Ed Parker's lineage, there's a lot of similarities and there's a lot of differences. It's all good. It's a matter of what, do you want to be an academic personality or you want to be a combative? Do you want to be a fighter by nature or a forms person? Or do you want to be a good facilitator and coach? There's enough information between, and you got to understand, I mean, he passed away in 1990. So you figure from 54 or 56, 1954, 1956 to 1990, that's not a very long time technically. But he did a lot of work and did a lot of good things spreading his art and helping the martial arts community. Look at Bruce Lee. If it wasn't for Ed Parker, nobody knew Bruce Lee, and, you know, and all the other people that came from that. So there's a lot of positive, I think, that came about with Ed Parker's time of being here with us. And even now more than ever, we're still talking about him because how he impacted all of us and the empowerment of just the company of, you know, 5 minutes or 10 minutes with Ed Parker was just like a lifetime. And, mm-hmm. you know, and he was known to do things. In other words, he didn't have long conversations with people because he was so busy. Even his wife mentioned that during the funeral. She knew that there was a time that she suspected that he knew that he was going to pass because he was willing to have long conversations with people. That was not of his normal. So regardless of whoever gets interviewed, whatever story they can share, whatever experience, good or bad, document it because it's just good to hear.
No, I agree. He touched so many lives and it's, yes. you know, we really do need to, you know, get as much of that as we can, especially as the time goes on and, you know,
one of the greatest things we could have learned, one of the greatest things we could have learned also from Ed Parker is what not to do. Mm-hmm. You know, he died at 59 years old. So he didn't take care of himself very well because he was always on the run and go. Matter of fact, when I was very close with Ed Parker Jr.'s son there for a while, when we were doing things together, and he made a comment when he was coming to Florida quite often, and he said, you know, Sean, he goes, I'm learning more things now about my father that I didn't even know. And I lived at the same house as he did. And I said, well, what do you mean by that? Because he's gone, he said, every weekend. So Evan, I don't know how many seminars he did in just 1 year. He went around the world, and it wasn't that he wanted to do seminars so much. He just wanted to learn about things about his dad that he missed out on. And the fact that, you know, he had a heart attack. I mean, he was leaving to go celebrate, I believe it was his mother or grandmother. I believe it was his mother, excuse me, her birthday celebration. No sooner did he land at the airport, started complaining about his chest. And Leilani said, oh, don't worry, Ed, I'll go get the luggage cart. She turned around. I don't know how many feet she got away and heard this horrific scream, some woman screaming. And she turned around and he was dead before he hit the ground. So, and he did like 2 seminars from what I remember just prior to going on to the airplane to go to Hawaii. Hmm. So there, I mean, everybody who's been great need to understand that, you know, stress, it'll kill you. And, you know, part of the priority of being a martial human should be, and I learned this myself because I had a scare of my own back in 2017. And I decided there's, you know, life is too precious. You know, we lost Frank Trail. We lost Tom Kelly. I can go on the list of loss and Ed Parker. Well, I mean, all the greats. And if we really trace the background, well, you know, a lot of them are what I call broken vessels. We recently lost Bob White. I don't know if it's been over a year or two now. I mean, just I can go on and on with the list of people that, oh my gosh, if you get a chance, talk to them now. Get everything you can because they're the reason a lot of us had an opportunity to even get further knowledge or any more knowledge that was in Ed Parker's, you know, wisdom bank was from these people. Because each one of them had something, you know, Richard Palanis, Lee Wedleg, Michael Robert Peck, Reiner Schulte. I can go on and on with all the different people. The list is so long that there's so much talent. Kempo's like a big rainforest. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. It is definitely, you couldn't get through the forest with all the knowledge that's out there. And for whatever it's worth, and because of that, I'm surprised that the newer generations aren't doing that. Instead, they're just cyberworlding it, you know, doing internet ranking and YouTube relationships, and you're missing something. Go to them, or if they're going to bring them into your school or club or host an event, it's those dinner time, lunchtime breaks and lunch or moments there. I remember having conversations with Ed Parker in the hotel room in the lobby and telling stories that you never heard before. And it's just, it was such a great moment of, it was one of those, holy cow, let's do this again.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's unfortunate that, you know, so many people are, you know, they're following, you know, Senior Grandmaster YouTube and getting all of their knowledge from that and not seeking out the people that are here, that are still here, that, you know, they can, you know, drink from the source. And
well, it's called relationships. You know, a student teacher is to build like a family relationship, that the benefit of being next to someone, there's no explanation that we're human beings. We're supposed to socialize. I mean, when the COVID thing hit and everybody was told to distance themselves, depression and anxiety has gone up 300% since that time. Mental health is at an all-time high because people got separated from being around others, you know. And my school, my club, we still trained. We just went out in the back in the open parking lot and kept our distance. But, you know, the worst thing to do is stop exercising and stop socializing and stop, you know, loving people. You know, I guess if I'm going to die of anything, I'll die of, you know, hugging someone with both my arms.
Yeah. No, I agree. I believe that, you know, humans are social creatures, and you take that away and it has really devastating effects on.
Yes,
on
sir.
Everything. So, you know, that was actually, you know, one of the driving factors behind, you know, doing this podcast is so that we can, you know, connect with each other, and, you know, hearing these stories, having these dialogues will, you know, hopefully help bring some of that social back into.
Well, when you can make, you know, our body puts out chemicals like serotonin, you know, things that make us happy, things that make us smile, things that make us laugh, as well as cry, you know. But if this is a temporary thing, it's temporary, but it's not the same. It's not. There's nothing the same without being next to someone in the same room and feeling the energy that we as human beings give to each other, to inspire, to be a pillar of hope, and to allow, because we all need personal growth. For the rest of our life, you need to grow. There's no such thing as stop growing. And it could be from physical to emotional to spiritual, all of that, even in your art. Now, you may get older and you're feeling it. Your body's not the way it used to be, but now use it for health and wellness. Just do it a little more slower. You know, there's no reason to hit so hard you break you and them. You know, that's why we call it control, you know, and, you know, we're missing some of that, and bring it back. And there's some of us who are still doing it. You know, I still have gatherings no matter what the size. I don't want to do the big events no more. It's just too expensive. Mm-hmm. But the smaller intimate ones, we call them VIPs, invitation kind of things, I enjoy it. It just allows me to have the camaraderie and bring people together, or I go to them, and it's the best thing we can do for each other. And I can only encourage people to keep it up, keep doing, you know. So that's one thing positive about the martial arts as a culture. We enjoy the relationships that are built to the point I look forward to these opportunities like what you and I are doing right now.
Yeah, excellent. So Kenan, getting back to Ed Parker, was, you know, everyone, you know, was looking to him and inspired by him. Did you ever get some I guess, you know, did he ever, you know, talk about people that, you know, inspired him or that he looked up to, or, you know, just maybe people that stood out to him that.
Well, when I was at working for Mr. Conde, there was a time when both of them were known to be very private at times, especially Master Conde. You weren't even allowed to his house unless he invited you, if he trusted you. It's just being a POW way back and when, you know, trust was a factor. I'm sure PTSD and all that, you know, had entered into his soul, I will call that. But I remember Mr. Conde and Mr. Parker just kind of comparing notes who they considered their right-hand guys. For whatever reason, I was just there. I was just at the house. And I remember Mr. Conde saying about Sam Shockley. Sam Shockley was he's passed, but he was the PKA heavyweight champion at one time. He was one of my senior classmates with the Conde Lightning kickboxing team. He was a pro fighter. So he mentioned how Sam Shockley and this guy named Avon Gray out of Baltimore were kind of like his bookends, if you will. You know, I guess they were talking about who are known to be good, and they're like enforcers. And, you know, every martial arts instructor has people that will always kind of look out for their teachers. And that's how first time I heard about Mike Pick and Frank Trejo. He mentioned how those, you call them pit bulls. Those are his pit bulls. But there's a whole host of a lot of people that the both of them surrounded themselves with that stood out as not only good martial artists, but they were good fighters. They were just loyal. They were always there. They didn't ask for much. They were just dedicated. And those are the kind of things that both of them, because of their cultural background, you know, Ed Parker being Polynesian and Conde being, you know, from the Philippines coming into the stage, you know, there was a lot of that non-trust, prejudiceness that they both were dealing with. I mean, definitely dealt with that. And so they had a common, you know, bond between each other. And loyalty was something that I know Mr. Conde was really big on it. He'd cut you off, you know, in a heartbeat if he didn't trust you. Whereas Mr. Parker, he was a little more tolerant, but, you know, they weren't somebody to cross. I know that. You know, that was not something you wanted to do. And that should be with any martial arts. When you learn loyalty and dedication, it should be one of those protocols as a black belt. You know, there's no shame in exploring your options, but always know who your teacher is and respect him or her, and, you know, talk about them even when they're gone, because how much of it wasn't for them, they wouldn't have given you that path that you're learning from. And there's times it's okay to agree to disagree, you know, but at the end of the day, you know, stay loyal. Stay loyalty is a good thing. Explore your options, you know, better yourself, because continued education is something we all should do. So I think you and I once talked about cross training. I've cross trained since I started the martial arts. You know, I just think anything, you know, and Ed Parker was known for it. He wanted to know the strengths and the weaknesses of all systems, because then he'd come up with a counter to those moves, or at least know how to deal with them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, one system doesn't have all the answers, and and that's how these arts evolve, is by, you know, you got to know what else is out there, and have those different perspectives to you know, be able to, you know, increase your knowledge and you know, help shape what you want.
It's just human nature for us to explore always an option. And as we become older, let it be that you're stronger or even slower or stronger, size matters in the real world. It does. You know, I remember this story one time at a seminar he did, and great answer too. Somebody asked him one time, he said, because he asked the audience if anybody had any questions after we were taking a break. And this guy raised his hand, and I can't believe he's asking this, but he said, "Mr. Parker, okay, let's say you were walking down the street and some guy came up from behind you, from hiding behind a bush, and, you know, went to hit you over the head with a club. What would you do?" You know what Ed Parker said? "I'd die." He goes, "What?" He goes, "Listen to what you just said. You said, I'm walking down the street. You came up from behind me. Pretty much you ambushed me, and you got a club in your hand." He goes, "Hey, I'm Ed Parker. I'm not a god." He says, "If you can't see it, you can't defend against it." Okay? That's my clearest answer to you. The same thing applied when it came, you know, to dealing with a gun. You know, we have weapon defenses, but those are principles. Nothing's foolproof. You know, I've met some great martial artists, and I don't know if you're familiar with the Guardian Angels, but I've been involved with that organization for about 30 years down here when I was involved in the 80s. So I was the coordinator for the area. And I've taken people without saying names, and they're supposed to be well-known world champions that went on some patrols with me in some areas that aren't the safest. They were the first to say, get me out of here. I mean, that's when the real shit hits the fan.
Yeah.
You want to see if your martial arts works? Come walk with me in areas that it's not the ring, there is no rules, and you can't wear your mouthpiece and your groin cup. How's that?
Exactly.
Yeah, and we've dealt with the gangs, the violence, the shootings, the pipe bombs, the bricks, the tables, you name it. That's when your martial arts training comes to light to see if it really works. That's the truth.
Exactly. So, you know, has there been instances where you know, you've had to apply your training?
Yes, sir. I mean, I was a bouncer. I was a head of security here in Palm Beach County with clubs. I've been in the club business. You know, I was doing that league, you know, back when one of my students owned a nightclub. So I was in charge of his security team. So I've dealt with a lot of violence. Yes. More than one occasion. I'll knock on wood. To me, I tell people all the time, anytime you can walk away and come on with the winning point of being on top, it's all about luck and skill. So, you know, yeah, you know, we all have our stories to tell. And some of those I look back on and go, oh my gosh, I can't believe I was involved with that. But I was. But it was the training. It was the awareness. It was the reflex. It was the right time of knowing how to engage or disengage. And I use verbal judo. You know, I would use humor or conversation, you know, because at the end of the day, I got to, those people can leave and come back. You know, I've had a few episodes that was really bad, but at the, you know, you're still, and if you're part of a security team, you're responsible for the people that work with you or you're, you know, in charge of, if you will. So everybody has to get out safe. And I had one incident where a young 16-year-old kid, we were on a patrol in Lake Worth and we had a chase with some drug dealers. And at the end of the night, we all parted and he went home. And I'll never forget this because it was on my birthday. And the next day I was calling to tell his mom that I was going to have to remove him from the group. And she tells me, she said, well, he died last night. And I said, ma'am, I'm not, his name was Robert Sachs. I said, I'm being serious. I'm not calling for no joke. She said, Sean, she goes, Robert died last night. I'm like, what? I don't know if you've ever heard of SIDS disease, you know, what babies get.
Yes.
Well, that's what they discovered he had, but he was 16. So the reason I was calling to tell his mom is because he didn't tell them he was going to go out on patrol with us. He lied to them. But he was a young kid from Boca Raton who wanted to make a difference in his community and give his time and volunteer with the Guardian Angels here in Palm Beach County. Well, I'm calling to be the bad guy of bad news because he lied to his parents, and I didn't tolerate that. Well, upon that phone call, we ended up having to go to a funeral to one of our members. So, you know, life sucks. It has good times, bad times, and somewhere in the middle, you know, if you just try to do the right thing, that's all we can do. And, you know, and be nice, man. Try to make some friends out there and be grateful and be blessed for the things you do have. But today with the world and with how violent it is and the politics that's going on with hate, I train to have peace. That's what I train for. I train every day to be aware and have peace. And if I can help someone who needs my help, I'm going to be there. You know, by the way, it was just up the street that, you know, former President Trump was attempted to get an assassination. I'm only 10, 15 minutes from where that location is. So it's in my back door. Yeah. Yeah.
No, excuse me. So to kind of change gears a little bit, I was thinking about in my training. So, you know, I started in one version of Kenpo and now doing another. And there's some spots where I'm struggling just I don't know if it's just the transition in the systems, or you know, the cement has already hardened in some areas. So I'm curious as to, you know, as you're going through the training, were there any particular spots where, you know, you just really kind of maybe struggle to grasp?
I'm going to answer a question that's on your mind, because I have had this happen for almost 30 years, and it was a personal quest of mine, is to be a better teacher, facilitator, and learn Ed Parker's system, not only strategically, but also the DNA as to how to be able to teach everyone who joined into this culture of art to not bail out or to feel that they're not capable or that they're struggling. I just think it's poor communication with whoever those teachers are. They may be great people, but they don't have enough skill in the art to communicate or demonstrate or how to make adjustments toward the individual who is trying to learn, and they'll bail out. I've seen a lot of students quit or go into something else. Not that it's, you know, a shame to go to anything else, or it's up to me to tell you not to do that. But at the end of the day, is the Ed Parker system is an advanced art. Okay, we are very advanced, and so we're not an easy system, and that we need to come to terms with. And cognitively, the brain, as well as the body, like anything else, he created a system that would be able to deal with most systems, if not better. So we overskilled the practitioners to deal with skilled people. So the problem lies is we want it too soon to be an expert too young. And the bottom line is, no, you need to learn other elements of your training. So my question to you now is, where's the struggle? What are you running into? Well, first of all, who is your current teacher right now? Who's your coach?
So it's, his name is Bill Piper, which I believe we talked about, you know him. So one of the things that just doesn't stick right in my mind is the way that basics are named. For some reason, even though they, you know, exactly say what it is you're doing, for some reason, I don't know, just the way that it's worded to me doesn't always compute.
Yeah, it's the vocabulary.
Yeah.
Right? The terminology and the vocabulary.
Yeah.
Well, and no disrespect to anyone out there, we have to understand if they're limited on their communication ability to get it. In other words, I work for the number one speaker, coach, leadership guru in the world. His name is John Maxwell. And the reason I find what that is all about so beneficial, even on my own level, is I became a certified coach under the Maxwell leadership because I wanted to really indulge in being a better communicator and connect to my audience. And what I've learned is that no two people learn the same way. Somebody may be an audio or a visual learner or tactile. They need to be touched and directed. That's one of my reasons why I don't think Zoom is the best way to be taught, because I can't see you from nose to toes. I can't see your mechanical makeup. I can't project that maybe part of your weight is being distributed wrong because of an injury. So I don't have the ability to shift and turn and help you realize how to transfer weight, mind, and body and breath by utilizing another technique. If it's a technique, the problem exists. There are relationships to other techniques that if I say, well, are you good with this move? Well, yeah, I can do that one good. Well, it's really the same move over here, but it's a different variable. You just don't see it because it wasn't taught to you that way. Now, when that happens, you then have this light bulb effect and go, wow, I never knew that. And that's the part that a lot of the newer generations, or even some of the older generations, I don't want to say they were lazy. They just didn't want to invest any further. They were content. They were content that they can punch, kick, and block, and I'm good. I don't have to teach a curriculum. I don't have to teach an art. I don't have to teach you, and now that you're a black belt, you know, you're good. Maybe a couple extensions, you're good. Whereas No, you're not. There's other stages of that development. What about the same interest that it took for you to go from yellow to orange, orange to purple, all the way up? Take it from first to second to third. I would enjoy saying, let's take this journey where you'll feel good about being a professor, where you can profess the art, not be given the belt, because it's like getting a candle on your cake.
Yeah, there's definitely... You
know, that's what happened with me when I was going and relearning under Wed Lake and Polanis. They wanted me to do it a certain way, and they said, hey, you know, one of the, and I invested. I mean, I was bringing those guys every Friday, for example, back in 91 or 2, whatever it was. I was going 3 hours across the state of Florida doing an hour private lesson and driving 3 hours back every Friday. And I got a logbook to prove it. Same thing with Huck Polanis. There was a point in time that I was bringing him to Florida like every 3 or 4 months. And I would call him up and say, hey, what's your schedule look like? Oh, well, this guy just canceled. I said, well, come on down. Even during holidays. And it was many days of training and hours long. I was asking good. I wanted to be a good qualified instructor so that my students were better and still become better than me. That's my main objective, is make them better than me, better communicators, better understanding the science, the physics, you know, the geometry, all of that, the system as a whole. Now, how you want to tailor it for yourself, either through sport or through combatives, that's on you, your mindset. You know, it's like people you see all over the internet teaching now. The big thing is knife work. What, Ed Parker had a book that was called Speak with a Knife. Why do you think he never put it out? Because he knew it was going to get into the wrong hands. You don't, there's just some stuff you don't put out in public or on video. Martial art, we're a war art. That means life, death. Those are things you don't do. I'm not here to entertain you. I'm here to show you skills so that you stay alive. And the ultimate of surprise is what makes this work. I don't want to show you what I know. I mean, we've all put out a few things. That's why it's very difficult to find Ed Parker at his best. A lot of those things that are being seen, those are just to get by techniques. That's not the real Ed Parker I knew. Because what he did on film versus what he did in privacy, totally different. You'll never see anything with Mike Pick showing his knife tactics. Because he don't do knife fighting. He does knife killing. Big difference. Same thing with most of the master instructors who are around. I'm sure they're careful. I hope that they're very careful who they teach the best of their work to. Because at the end of the day, it's called negligence and liability.
So where, you know, kind of based on how you see things, you know, previously and how you see things now, where do you see kind of the future of Kenpo going, or where would you like it to see the direction that
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't care. I used to care and have an opinion. And it's, you know, when you're dealing with grown adults, they know better. You would think. So there's a difference between, and this is the thing about the martial arts. We have a lot of amateurs and they're seventh, eighth, ninth, and whatever. I just saw this guy get a showing his promotion of ninth degree. And the person he got it from, he's only met twice. Twice. Two times.
Yeah.
And do we blame him or do we blame the person that gave it to him? Well, we know he didn't give him anything. It was sold to him. But you got to remember, at the end of the day, he's got to wear it. So that's not my place. And, you know, I was told by Master Conde a long time ago, he said, hey, man invented the art. Man can change it, but your integrity is on you. So I remember there was two occasions that I refused a promotion. One was my fifth degree, and the other one was recently a ninth degree. And it's because of how I look upon status. I'd rather have a relationship with my teacher. I've never chased rank. ever. And I leave it in the hands, and I don't do rubber stamping. I don't do what you see out there with these rubber stamps, like Ed Parker and Frank Trejo are still alive. I don't think so. You know, imagine this, Reggie, if something happened to you and you saw your signature being put out there in the world of Oz, and you passed away in 1990, and here we are in 2024. That's pretty offensive. And
yeah,
guess what?
I don't understand
that document ever went, if you ever had to go to court, that document is not going to hold up because it's not legit. And see, nobody challenges it.
And yeah, so that it's doesn't just make like, a lot of sense to me.
You know what I'm saying? And you see these party promotions where it looks like an autograph, like a placemat, versus a document that was well-deserved. If you don't believe that you've earned it, then don't put it on. Wait your turn and earn it from the teachers that you trust, and they trust you. Or maybe you're with the wrong teacher. How's that?
Well, yeah.
The old saying goes, how you get it is how you give it.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah. No, it's really stunning to me to see, you know, things where like, yeah, how can you get promoted by somebody that you haven't been working with or that doesn't know you?
Well, another part
doesn't
too
know
is,
you well.
Is, yeah. The other part is we cannot really judge everyone because they're different. We're all at different levels of being with the criteria, right? It's not only about what they know on the physical side of it. I disagree. If you think someone knows all the sets and all the forms and all the techniques, that qualifies them. How many times you've heard someone be a pedophile?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep.
Or some other felony act or some other thing that is just not lawful. You're going to promote that? So again, that's why it's important to develop relationships. You don't know what that true person's character is like in their community. And they're boasting, you know, it's like anything else. Reputation, we all have one. Protect it. Protect yours and the person that you did train with, because you're a part of that now. And if you have to be the one percenter, that's what a leadership stands for. You know, working with Maxwell Leadership, that's one of the things that I deal with every day is across the world, from government to educational institutions to the medical industry to Boeing Airlines to every big corporation to a mom and pop operation across the world, leadership is the number one request of learning because people don't quit jobs, they quit management. And leadership is one of those things that's not developed. It's an acquired knowledge. And you need to learn it from somebody who can really bring people up, not compress them down or control them. So the martial arts it's now a big business. It has been for a number of years, but we need better coaching and communication skills. I think I'd like to see more community service get out there and serve our communities because we are people of service. You know, especially under crisis, like let's say during the COVID, who else was really out there still servicing the community when there was no place for many to go? So that to me is important. And I know for a fact, that's another thing that I wanted to share with you, going back to Ed Parker. One of Mr. Condi's black belts that joined his organization had a falling out with his old teacher. I think he was a Shorin Ryu or Shotokan guy, but he had a mushroom farm in Avondale, Pennsylvania. And he wanted to always have his own school. Well, this guy said to him that he broke away with, "You'll never amount to anything. So if you're not with me, you'll never be successful. You can't open a school. You need me," kind of thing. Well, that guy was so upset that he reached out to Mr. Condi, and in conversation with Mr. Parker about it, the two of them together collectively went to this guy's location and did a open guest seminar featuring Ed Parker as the guest. The place was packed, and I drove Ed Parker. I was his escort, me and Avon Gray, this other guy. And you want to know something? He did it for free. Ed Parker did it for free. I was there. That was the Ed Parker I knew. And I'm sure when he heard that story, it made him remember back when he was going to open up a school. And the guy down the street said, "Oh, you'll never be anything. You'll be within a few months." which is what propelled him to be successful. So that's the Ed Parker I know, and Master Conde. They gave to those who needed many, many of times.
I love that.
Yeah.
You know, they're willing to put themselves out there and
so back to you, if you don't mind me asking you, you were saying how you're having a transition challenge on something. What is it that you're having the transition on?
I think most of it is just a lot of, you know, muscle memory and you know, the cement dried from my previous training, and you know, I wasn't able to completely jettison all of that when I started with my current.
How old are you?
I'm 46.
Okay. Any learning disabilities or challenges like ADHD or any trauma, any head injuries, body injuries?
Well,
sometimes our focus falls off because it's never been diagnosed either. Mm-hmm. And then, like you said, with the muscle memory. So the past of your training was before doing what? What was your previous training?
Well, I was previously at, you know, essentially a Tracy's school. So
okay.
Going from
and the, then you and wasn't Mr. Piper a part of the Tracy's, or was it strictly with Larry Tatum?
Larry Tatum and
okay.
A few
so
others,
the Tracy system that you did actually is a better segue than any other system into the Parker stuff. So how long you been doing the Parker Kempo?
I guess about coming up on 3 years now, I believe.
Okay, so it's still young and still new. Are you still going to classes?
Yeah. It's still going and still working on.
What are you working on right now? What is your current level to learn?
I just got my first third brown technique. So
nice.
I just got my belt a couple weeks ago. And
okay, congratulations.
So I'm just, you know, just absorbing the journey.
Are you doing the 24 system?
We're on 16.
16. Okay, good.
Yeah.
So you're on those transition, are there particular techniques that are just challenging either by name references or by the motion of doing them?
No, it's not the techniques. It's really, really like the basics. So For example, a hook punch and a roundhouse punch, they are reversed in my mind, just for whatever reason. I always flip-flop them in my mind.
You mean so, just on the basics?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Explain to me the difference of the two.
So now see if I mess this up here. So in a roundhouse punch stops at the center line, but in my mind it goes all the way around. Mm-hmm. Versus the hook goes all the way around, but in my mind it should stop before that. So
here's the best way to understand that in the academics. A roundhouse is a push of energy and a hook is a pull of energy. How do you relate that to physical movement? Taking a circle and going from 6 o'clock up the circle to 12 o'clock, okay? When your arm swings and hits on the top of the apex at 12 o'clock stopping, that is a roundhouse. But when a hand starting at 12 o'clock, starting point of origin, comes on the downside of the circle of the apex, that's called a hook. Now, to make it simple, drop it down to your legs, and here's how it works. If you're in a neutral bow and your back leg chambers and extends the leg fully out toward the person in front of you, that's a half of a circle if a full circle is 360 degrees, right? Mm-hmm. So that's pushing to do a roundhouse, with your leg being bent and extended out. But what if you extend your leg out first and then pull it back like you're going to hit yourself on the backside? Now it's pulling, hence the name hook. So a roundhouse is on the top side. A hook is on the downside of the apex. Now, that's in the academic verbiage. At the end of the day, who gives a rat's ass? Just punch
it. Exactly. Yes, so I like that.
The bottom line is terminology and delivery. So basics have their point for the science of teaching the physiology and the kinesiology and the geometry of patterns, which is all part of the universal pattern. But because you're becoming a brown belt now, you already know how to punch, kick, block, parry. Now they want you to talk the language in which we speak. So if I can help you on any of these questions, I want you to reach out to me, and I will guarantee you, my friend, I will have the ability, as taught to me, to share that clearly with you so that you walk away and go, now I can explain it. Because it's a language in our brain, but can we get it out of our mouth to communicate? So even with Maxwell Leadership, one of Maxwell's books says, everyone communicates, few can connect. That's the actual title, because we can all talk, but can we connect? So that's why Ed Parker would use short stories, antidotes, and analogies. You know, it's like taking your hand and pushing your hand back if you had hair, and that's called an upward elbow. So let's say you were answering the phone and you went, hello, like this. Do this, hello. Do that with me. And say, hey, it's for you.
Hello.
And go like that. Hey, it's for you. That's for an inward block. Now, if you take that inward block and say, which way did he go? And you went that way with your thumb and then tucked it away. That's an outward block. Well, that's how kids relate. They don't understand unless you give them examples. Mm-hmm. That's where it was a language. And then we would use analogies or some kind of circumstance that you could relate to. And that's why his other book he never did was called Everyday Gestures. Because we have everyday gestures that make it so that the students can learn. Well, the vocabulary, case in point. Do you know the technique, destructive twins?
Yes.
Okay. What's the first move?
That one is...
They're trying to grab you around the shirt or shoulders or choke, whatever. And they like a double lapel grab, right?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then they're going to pull you toward them. Mm-hmm. First move out of short three and long three. What do you do? How do you start with that move?
Well, you're going to step offline and you're going to use those double punches there.
Okay, do it to me in the camera. What hand is on top?
My left hand.
I want you to remember that. Remember the technique, Sword of Destruction?
Sure do.
Do the block. I'm the attacker. What hand are you blocking of mine?
That would be your left hand.
So what was the name of that technique? Sword of Destruction, right?
Exactly.
And what was the name of the first technique you did with the other hands?
Destructive Twins.
The word destructive or destruction refers to left side. It's the code word. We have code words. So if you don't know the code words, you're not going to understand the language. So anytime you see in our system that something that says destructive or destruction, something with the left side is going to stand out in that technique. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
You got that today. Now you can go back and look and say, ah. So those communicating efforts and need to know antidotes will start to make your picture of the quest that you have with your journey a little more fun than frustrating.
I like it.
So this is where this opportunity that you have now with your podcast, you're going to be able to grow by interviewing other people to give you the knowledge that you may not have the ability to get on an airplane and go travel to. And by the way, I invite you anytime to come down to one of our events.
No, yeah,
and Mr.
Sure.
Piper. You for guys sure. are always welcome. Yep.
For sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, thank you so much. I'm overjoyed to get get some of your knowledge here. And, you know, of course, I will, we'll certainly be in touch for more morsels of
yeah,
knowledge.
Yeah, anytime so. That happens and you're going through what I call, you know, those challenging moments, speed bumps, just write it down and just say, okay, I'm gonna address this. Because quite honestly, it was designed that way. Ed Parker enjoyed questions. And he enjoyed it. We have all different interpretations. That's why technically we have general rules and principles, but as long as it looks similar and gets the job done appropriately, you're on the right journey. So no two people are going to do the same exact way. And like an artist where he has or she has her own way of doing their paintbrush and pencil drawings, he did that with the system. What the people did on the West Coast isn't the same as on the East Coast. Mm-hmm. You can see the differences the way Frank Trejo or Tatum or Richard Palanis and anybody that was around Ed Parker for any stretch of time, you could see their similarities and you could see their far differences.
Exactly.
Yep.
Well, thank you so much for your time there. We're going to head towards a close with our time for today, but I will take this opportunity to go ahead and allow for shameless self-promotion. So if there's anything that you'd like to bring up that we hadn't touched on before we head out for today, now's
no,
your
I
time
mean,
to...
Other than what you're doing is honorable, and I would take every generation from old to young and interview them. I would consider doing things that are going to benefit people in their martial arts training as, you know, food for thought. You know, and whoever those people that come to mind, your mind, this is your podcast. So whet your appetite now more than ever. Invite the people that you're wanting to speak to or get a little piece from. And now it's going to turn into almost like a martial arts library, which is kudos to you. Good for you.
Yeah, no, thank you so much. And, you know, I'm certainly, I've got a lot of people on the schedule. So, I'm just really overjoyed and that, you know, both the notable who's who, in the Kumpo world have reached out. And then, you know, us little being able to have both, you know, all the different perspectives and all the different sides, you know,
An excellent point of view. And quite honestly, that's a good way to think, because at the end of the day, someone else is going to be thinking maybe the same questions as you're bringing to the table. And use good judgment. I mean, not just because someone says something doesn't mean it's always the truth in its entirety. And at the end of the day, just let them say what they have to say, because we all have a story. And it's those stories that make connections. It's those stories that bring back history. It's that story that allows, you know, it's a big link on this chain that goes all over the world. And if we can all be a part of the link, it just allows us to realize we're really all part of the same big, huge family. And we're just now getting to know each other further.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Well, yes. Thank you so much. We will, I will certainly be in touch, and I will let you know when this is ready to go out. And
good deal. Good deal.
I can't thank you enough for your time.
Thank you very much, and much success.
All right. Well, you have a wonderful, wonderful day, and we'll talk soon.
All right. Take care.
All right. Thank you.